try to stop my river. I don't want no problems today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Spoiler Warning Podcast. This is review number 761 with a review of Problemista. I'm Christopher Schnazy.
And I'm Stephen Miller.
And if you're joining us for the first time, the Spoiler Warning Podcast is a weekly film review program. Each week on the show, we're going to dive in, debate, discuss, and argue over the latest films coming to a theater near you. This week, we're talking about Problemista, but we're recording this episode the night after the Oscars. So, you know, even though it technically doesn't relate to this film, why don't we start talking a little bit about what we thought of last night's Oscars broadcast, Stephen?
Yeah, I liked it. I'm a weirdo this year because I liked all 10 movies that were nominated for Best Picture, and not just liked them, but I would say liked them quite a bit. Like, there was no Bohemian Rhapsody this year. There was no Green Book. There was none of those things where you're like...
There was no Dallas Buyers Club.
Exactly. Well, hey, now. none of those things where you're like, how did this get in the mix? You know, I think all 10, including, as I've gone to bat for on the show, Maestro tends to get a lot of hate. American Fiction, weirdly, has had quite a bit of, not hate exactly, but I'd say that's the other underdog that people have been critical of. And I thought both were great. Like, I was a big fan. In terms of the awards, I think they mostly went with the kind of predictable chalk picks. Like, there weren't too many big upsets this year. Joanne and I went to an Oscar party, and I gave her my safe ballot so I could do like more wild conjectures just for fun. And Joanna won like the whole party by a pretty sizable margin.
Nice.
So there, nothing was that different than what people predicted, basically. Emma Stone winning, totally deserved. Feel happy for her. I was really bummed that Lily Gladstone didn't get it. And in general, I wanted Killers of the Flower Moon to win a bit more. And otherwise, I think like Barbie should have at least gotten production design. Like, I get that Poor Things looked amazing, but come on. Barbie was like production design that earned $1 billion. I don't know. There was something that felt odd to me about that. But overall, I had fun.
Especially when you consider like the performance of I'm Just Ken.
Yeah.
The amount that went into that and how it felt so like all encompassing of like the crowd and that, like, I know that that song and the performance of the song is different than, you know, production design, but like,
yeah,
you couldn't have gotten to that place without the film having that to begin with. So,
and that was clearly like the highlight of the night and probably one of the, probably the best song performance at the Oscars since Shallow in 2018 or whatever was.
Yeah.
this was a banger for sure.
Yeah, all in all, I enjoyed it as well. I think that I mean, there was not a single category where, I mean, outside of the categories where like I had not seen any like shorts and stuff like that, where I hadn't watched anything, so I have no thought of it. But there was nothing that like afterwards I went, what? Or how is that possible? I just kind of went like, oh, there you go. Like,
yeah,
you know, like I didn't really feel bad about anything. The, you know, the broadcast itself seemed good. Like, I like the new format with bringing up like the old people to, not old people, well, in some cases old people, but past winners to sort of like pump up the people who are nominated. Like, I think that was a good format. And yeah, like all in all, I was like, yeah, that was a pretty good Oscars.
I felt a little spoiled by that format because the first time they did it, it was amazing. Like, all the supporting actress past winners honoring the current ones, they like knew them personally, they were making them cry, they were saying really heartfelt things.
Yeah.
And then in future ones, it started to be like, I don't think these people watched the movie, you know, like some of the things they were saying, it was like, I don't know who wrote this, but I don't think anyone who watched the movie would use this adjective to describe what the person did. I don't remember exactly, but like someone called someone transformative, where I was like, really, him? I don't think so.
Honestly, that is my nightmare, like being in any situation where like I have a canned thing and somebody else is like, I just wanted to congratulate you on like everything you've accomplished because like you almost died 7 times last year. And just the fact that you pulled through and now you're winning this award is like, it really shows how hard you try. And then it's my turn. I'm like, you're a good dude. thumbs up.
It always feels off when they don't have the don't have anything emotional to say.
But
I did like, you know, I'm a fan of like let the Oscars be about the movies, so I love whenever they like take the time to have elder statesmen or whatever say a few words. And I'm just super basic tonight because I think Jimmy Kimmel is a great host too. I always have. I think he nails it. I think he has the right level of comedy, the right number of bits. I think he's witty, but not too mean or annoying or anything. He toes the line pretty well. I thought his zinger about Trump at the end of the night was like great.
It was pretty good.
It got me pretty good. You can't think about it too much because it kind of falls apart, but the turn of phrase felt really cool in the moment.
Did it pass your jail time?
Yeah, exactly.
That was pretty good.
I was happy overall. One of the upsets I was rooting for and I was glad happened was Zone of Interest winning sound. I think whatever you think of that movie, like that movie, sound is half of the movie.
Yeah, 100%.
There's something really cool about, like, the Academy is getting a little more highbrow, but not so highbrow that it's like boring or snooty. They're like right in between in a way that's fun to watch.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, is it was an upset, but it wasn't like a snub or whatever the equivalent of. It wasn't like a shocking left field choice. It was like, oh yeah, duh. it was kind of like one of those things, was like 100% deserving. I think a similar category was like, I'm super stoked for Godzilla Minus One. Like, I'm really excited for it.
But
like, the creator, I feel like.
I was in the same place. And weirdly, I was framing the creator as an upset when I was coordinating with Joanna about what we would vote for. Because I told her Godzilla Minus One is the safe bet. But that's wild if you think about it. Like, Godzilla Minus One would not have been the safe bet. In any other universe. I felt the same.
100% stoked for them, though. And like, it was great. Like, everything about, from the moment it was announced to, like, the moment they were moving to the next category was, like, pitch perfect, and I wouldn't have traded that for the world. But it was just kind of, like, funny when I was like, if there's one thing the creator was good at.
It definitely deserved to be in the conversation. I guess it's the question of the creator stretched a quite big budget into looking like a huge budget, and Godzilla Minus One stretched a tiny budget into looking like a quite big budget. And like, your mileage may vary in terms of which you want to honor. But I think it also just reflects like the voting body is clearly way more into international films than they used to be. Like Anatomy of a Fall winning screenplay too. Like, this kind of stuff didn't used to happen until a few years ago. I kind of feel like Parasite blew it open, and now everyone is reaping the benefits.
Everybody's like, "Wow, there's so much out there." We've been paying attention to.
There's so many countries.
Oh, good times.
Yeah, it was solid.
You know, transitioning on from that, should we just get into our review of Problemista?
Sure.
All right, we're going to take a listen to the trailer for Problemista, and then come back and give you all a review.
This is the story of Alejandro. His mother gave him everything, but she had a recurring dream of Alejandro leaving the safe world she created, where he'd face the dangers she tried so hard to keep him from.
Lo siento, señora Fuentes, pero Inmigración decidió no considerar la aplicación. Alejandro Martinez.
Yes, hi, let's speak.
Mr. Khalil's ready for you.
Thank you.
Okay, look, you don't have a while. You have a month to find someone to co-sign your visa. And if you don't, you have to leave the U.S.
I started freelancing for this lady.
I'm late. I know I'm late. I'm so late.
This menu. What is it with walnuts? Walnuts, walnuts, walnuts. It's like a cafe for squirrels.
Walnuts, they go very nicely with the salad.
Do I look like I need educating on fine cuisine?
Yeah, you think this lady can sponsor you?
I mean, we'll see.
We'll see. Oh.
Cascada de luz. Is this your dream, making toys?
Yeah.
Help me curate an exhibition, and I'll sponsor you.
Other thing is, you can't take money right now.
You must find a sponsor and pay fees to earn money. The maze is impossible to navigate.
Wait, I mean, this sucks so much for you.
I'm barely keeping afloat.
Your boss is a monster.
I need to get paid.
She's a Hydra.
Such a nightmare.
None of those options. Human being.
Elizabeth, let me talk.
I question if you are ready for this job.
Why are you making everything so difficult?
You don't know what it is to really want something.
to be on a mission,
journeying into the unknown.
It sounds brave.
It's so simple, Alejandro. This is it. The sky's the limit.
Pupusas.
Yes.
And those nuns they killed in the 80s.
Right. So.
All right. So that was the trailer for Problemista. Basically, it's a story of this man named Alejandro who's living in New York, and he has dreams to work for Hasbro. One day he loses his job, which puts his visa in jeopardy, and he has to find a new job and ends up connecting up with this, like, insane art person, and it's about him trying to sort of help her out and get her to sponsor his visa so that he can continue to stay in the United States and hopefully work to his goal of working for Hasbro. So, Stephen Miller, what did you think of Problemista?
Yeah, I don't know if I was in just an extra good mood when I watched this movie, because I see seams in it, you know, like I see things that would make me criticize it a little bit as rough or kind of festival or first directorial outing. But I was really taken with Problemista. I actually really enjoyed this movie. I think it's very hard to do this kind of like whimsical, surreal comedy and keep it up for a full runtime. Especially this is like a 2-hour movie. This isn't like 70 minutes or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I think it always keeps your attention. It is very much Julio Torres's like singular vibe, and I think the movie works overall. I've said this about some comedies in the past, and I don't remember if you watched the show, so it might not mean anything to you, but this really feels like it's following in the spirit of Broad City, like turned into movie form. It has like the New York based kind of absurd sketch comedy, kind of plot driven, also has a beating heart underneath the surface. It literally even rips at least one joke about a Craigslist ad to clean a house, like, directly from the Broad City pilot, but that's fine. Maybe this actually happened. You know, who am I to judge? But beneath all the silliness, I think it's actually a really kind of charming ode to a persistence that I do not possess and makes me cringe to even think about, which is people who are willing to be an absolute pain in the ass to get their way. And I think the movie is kind of saying, for all the narcissism and terribleness about that way of life, sometimes if you can point those people in the right direction, they're the only thing that can beat a broken bureaucratic system that is intent on fucking you over. And in this case, it's the immigration system. And I thought that just the combination of like the classic fun digs at hipster living in New York and the glamour of the city versus like the not glamour of actual everyday life, that paired with this story of Tilda Swinton's like unbelievable "may I speak to the manager" monster in the movie, it just really worked for me, and I found it actually really kind of lovely and special and interesting. And yeah, I liked it a lot more than I was expecting to going into it, and I think it tells an interesting story about some of the ridiculousness of our immigration process. Like, you need $6,000 to apply, but you aren't allowed to work until you have the visa. So the only way to get money is to already have money or ... under the table. Don't tell anyone. And it had so many things like that, that it just visualizes as like a maze or an impossible series of challenges in a way that it isn't doing anything like shocking or outrageous, but I just thought it was a really lovely, cohesive movie from beginning to end. So yeah, I like Problemista a lot.
Cool. Yeah, so when I first saw the trailer for this film, like, if I'm honest, like, I wrote this off immediately. you know, like, something about that the first time I watched it, I don't think there was a teaser and then a regular trailer. I think there was just the trailer. But to me, it felt like somebody's personal project, them doing a thing that is specifically for themselves, and, like, you're either gonna come along for it. But it felt like everything wrong with indie cinema, right?
Yeah.
All wrapped into a thing that's like an inside joke for one person. And, you know, I was kind of like, I probably am not going to see this movie. But like, you know, I kept seeing the trailer before everything else that I was seeing at Alamo, and like it slowly started to grow on me a little bit. And I was like, all right, maybe my first like gut reaction to this trailer was not fair to this film. Maybe, you know, maybe everything will be fine. Jamie wanted to see it. We're like, cool, we're going to go see Problemista. You know, it was the thing that was coming out this weekend. We're like, okay, cool, let's go do it. So I went in to see it, and I was, you know, by the time I got to the theater, I was like at least open to the idea of liking this film. And the one thing this film taught me is sometimes maybe you can judge a book by its cover.
Okay.
I didn't hate this film. I just found it a little, I felt vindicated, let's just say that. Like, my gut reaction to the first trailer was exactly what this film gave me. And I think that, like, you talked about seeing seams and stuff like that in that this film, and like I couldn't not see the seams, right? Like, for me, the humor, it was just a little too cute. And when I say cute, I don't actually mean cute. I mean, like, you know, like too clever by half, sort of. Like, it felt like it was, I am trying to be indie. I am trying to be like playing in this world of everything is like, you know, when something's happening, I'm visualizing it because isn't this cool and kitschy, right? Like, that's what it felt like to me. And to me, I found the film quite grating. Like, though, like, you know, Tilda Swinton's character is quite literally one note. And it either works for you or it doesn't. And for me, it kind of wasn't, like, our introduction to her first bout of erratic behavior is her tapping on a screen because she can't find a photo. And the way she taps on it, in my head, I'm like, you have to have that be a video or something so that you can't actually produce, you know, like the way it didn't feel like somebody even interacting with being confused with a piece of technology, right? It was just like, this is a bit where I'm ad-libbing, but the most I can do is go, oh, I can't find the photo. It's always out and in and out. And I just, like, something about that, like, you're laughing right now because...
I am, because it's funny, because it's absurd, and that's the point.
Yeah, but it's like, it's absurd to a level in which it's not, like, this film is just weird, and sometimes I can vibe with the weirdness of it, and this feels like it's somebody active, like, let me take everything I've written and see where I can make it more weird, and not in, like, a Lonely Island kind of way or something like that, where it's a joke that is made set in reality. This is like, there's never a reality. There's only the joke, and like everything is hyper real. And I feel like, you know, there's moments of time where you have voiceover talking about how hard it is to actually deal with like your visa situation. I feel like this film is so unconcerned with actually telling that story. To me, it feels like having a problem with a visa is the playground for which this film is playing in, not the story that we are being told. You know, like if this was a actually serious story about this guy trying to get a visa and how hard that is, and on top of that, there was humor and levity thrown in throughout, and you actually feel for the lengths this person's trying to go. But every single thing that's introduced feels like a joke at the expense of being a reality for this person, this character. And I know that like all this stuff is like actually stuff people have to deal with, but there is literally a point, the entire story is, can I find a job where somebody can sponsor me? And there's a part in this film, minor spoilers, where somebody other than the person he wants it from says, how about you just take this job and I will sponsor you? But the character never even for one second is like, oh, great. Because the actual story is him interacting with this crazy woman, and the visa thing is like there's never a world in which he's like, I'm actually so desperate that I have to take whatever job comes about. It's actually just, no, this is the only job that I have to work because this comedic situation I'm trying to present has to be the only solution to my problem. And I just felt, I don't know, I found myself forcing myself to participate in the film as opposed to genuinely enjoying it.
Interesting. It's a bummer. I get it. I hear everything you're saying. The moment you even talk about, to me, I liked that, because to me, the story isn't, like you said, the story isn't how will he get his visa. The story is a person who is used to being passive, who's the wallflower, who at the beginning of this movie, minor spoilers, but it happens in the first like 10 minutes, Alejandro gets fired from his job. And he has this very awkward meeting with his boss, where he sits down to her and she informs him that he's fired. And he very kind of gently tries to be like, but I didn't do anything wrong, so shouldn't I get a chance? And she just does it. And then he thanks her, you know, thanks her for the wonderful time and walks away awkwardly. And the plot of the movie is him going from that into being someone who believes in his own vision and who supports himself. And immigration is like an aspect of that, because I think the movie is saying when you are kind of invisible, you know, as an immigrant might feel in the country, like at the mercy of other people, you kind of want to let everyone walk all over you. And the arc of the movie is him learning to fight back. And so the switch that you're talking about where his problem would be solved, from then on, he is not motivated by, can I get a visa? He's motivated by, I'm fighting the monster. Like, I'm fighting back against this thing. And I liked that part. Like, the reason right after that scene, he has a moment when he chews out Tilda Swinton on the phone. And the reason he can do that is he's no longer helpless, right? Like, he now has options. And from options, he finds the voice or whatever to actually get his way and get through to her. That was at least how I read it. So it's fine. You're making a face.
What's funny is like the things that I want to talk about, like, I don't think this film is worth having a spoiler segment for, but right, there's some things that I want to say that like require it. All I'll say is I think where he arrives at the end of this film, the monologue he does and the results that may or may not come from that monologue undercut everything in the journey up until that moment. And like, if the goal was I need to try to stay in the US so I can work for this company, it seems like that idea in and of itself is undercut by a situation that he's trying to fight for. So it's like every single battle he's participating in isn't actually connected to the overall narrative. It's just where the joke is funniest, right? Mm-hmm. And the word funniest in my sentence is doing a lot of work, because I didn't particularly find this film funny. It was
I'm bummed.
It was humorous. But there were like maybe a few chuckles from me, and like maybe that's not true. There were people in the front row of this movie who were just having a laugh riot.
Right.
My section of the theater, not just me, I mean like the entire row I was in the back of Theater 5 in Alamo, was mostly silent throughout the film. But there were people in that front row who were just like, I'm eating this shit up. And I was like, I'm happy for you folks.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't, don't get me wrong, this wasn't bottoms. This wasn't like a laugh riot or anything. Yeah, yeah. But I had lots of chuckles throughout this movie. And I feel like my audience enjoyed it pretty much the whole time. But it is true, like it's towing a kind of strange line between being silly enough to just be resting on the merits of ha 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 laugh out loud comedy and being sincere enough to be a kind of moving portrait of immigration. And it's doing a little bit of each, but not in the big sick way where you're having something that is an actual drama that has humor on top. You know, this is not that kind of movie. This is not like Judd Apatow said, Julio Torres, here you go. Maybe he did. Honestly, I didn't Google it. I don't think he did. I think someone would have mentioned it.
I don't think he did either.
But this is not that formula at all, right? This is very much like from his mind of kind of absurd, surreal humor. Let's have a movie that is personal in his way, which is still tipped way more toward the like surrealness and way less toward the real world drama. Yeah. But man, it just, like some of the shows I love, I just think it had a lot of really great details that made me laugh a lot. Like I love, and I'm very conflict averse deeply in my bones, I love all the scenes of like Tilda chewing into waiters or talking to Apple help because she can't find her photos and what did they do to her photos, and that moment where like in every one of her arguments it tips over into like she is winning and nothing anyone can do will stop her. I think it had just a lot of humor there. I loved when she's freaking out, the camera keeps doing close-ups to things in her room that are like evidence of the kind of person she is, like a high-heeled shoe with an iPhone cord wrapped around it. Stuff like that I just found very, very amusing. FileMaker Pro, That's a real thing. I didn't know it was a real thing. Yeah, I Googled afterwards.
I've used FileMaker Pro.
Oh,
Steven,
really?
I actually know FileMaker Pro.
Wow, you're the one. Oh, no. I assumed they made it up for the movie. I couldn't have imagined.
No. Yeah, that's the... Yeah, we used it at my first job.
Nice. Okay, wow. So you might be the expert on this movie, actually, because no one in this movie knows what it is.
That was one of the things, too, when I was like, it's so oddly specific. Like, clear, like, that's one of the things where I was like, that is the most specific joke that, like, works on you because you just assumed it was, like, a thing that was made up.
Yeah.
But, like, to me, it's like, who hurt you? like, who made you use FileMaker Pro at one of your previous jobs?
I mean, clearly someone did.
I mean, probably what happened is the inciting incident that has to do with plugging and unplugging things. It was probably in real life a FileMaker Pro accident, and that's how he lost his job.
Yep. I can see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I could go on. There's a personification of Craigslist, which I like, which you probably didn't. There's just lots of stuff that was right up my alley. And I can't stress this enough. For people who did watch Broad City, this feels like it could easily be like a 90-minute Broad City episode. And yeah, you probably shouldn't watch it because clearly you would not be into it. But yeah, I'm a fan. I like it. I like the cast. I like RZA, Greta Lee. It's great to see her again. That is one of those scenes where you know what the punchline is going to be like immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
But I still enjoyed watching it.
That's one of the times that I chuckled.
Okay, good.
That was pretty good. That was good.
Yeah, you can see it coming a mile away, but they play it so well in that, like, whatever. Everything is heightened. You know, it's extreme. The emotions are very extreme, and then the joke undercuts it in a way that it is different from a normal comedy. Like, it's clearly tuned to whatever Julio Torres is into, but I'm into it too. I was a fan. My thesis for the movie, I guess, if I needed one thing that it's about, is the character of Alejandro and Julio Torres's comedy. Probably, I haven't actually seen anything he's created other than him like showing up in different things, and I think we saw him at Oddball Comedy Fest or whatever that thing in SF is one time.
Oh, did we?
Yeah. He was in one of the things, and I think you were with me.
He was in Together as well.
Yeah, I remember that was a great scene with him as like the barista.
To problemista, it's just
exactly. But I feel like he and Alejandro, they care about flawed people and flawed things and ideas that are kind of askew, right? Like toys that have this like weird element to them, or people like Tilda Swinton who are off in some way, or his own worldview is kind of off and different and interesting. And the movie is like, embrace that part of yourself, be a little bit of a narcissist, march to the beat of your own drum. And I get that it sounds super cliched when I say it like that, but I feel like as a total movie, that is the victory. Is, and I know what you're going to say, and we won't go into spoilers, but the victory is he doesn't do the thing that just solves the problem. He does the thing that solves the problem the way he dreamed he would be able to solve the problem, and that is about the like the vision and sticking to it, basically. And I liked it.
Speaking of vision, this film is bookended by allusions to a vision. And I feel like the intro is reverse engineered by it doesn't feel like a true symbolic. It's like I, as a character, recreate this thing to attribute significance to a thing that I had no understanding of before the moment I attributed it to. There's something about that was like emotionally in the moment, it worked for me. Like with the music going and the people and like the face of the actor in that scene, like it was 100% working on me. And I'm like, the fuck is happening right now? Why am I emotionally caring about this suddenly?
That's how I felt about the whole movie. Like that feeling is exactly how the whole movie struck me, where I was like, this is so silly. And why am I feeling things? I'm feeling things.
Maybe I needed to watch this like Memento, where I start with that scene and just go
back and then work
10 minutes at a time, and then I'm like, "Holy shit, by the time I arrive at that first scene, I'm just like, this movie's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give this man an Oscar.
The closest comp I can give, which most people will see as damning, if anyone even remembers this movie, is that that Zoe Lister-Jones Sundance movie, How It Ends, that we watched like deep in the pandemic. If you remember that, the person walking around waiting for the end of the world, and it basically was like a bunch of sketch comedy.
I remember the movie. My was because I actually genuinely liked that movie.
I know. Well, that's the thing. Most people hated that movie.
Yeah.
like we were weird, but I loved it because it's just like, this is a sketch vibe dragged out to feature length, and I'm having fun, and it's playing with so many different ideas, and God bless it for that. Yeah. And that's how I feel about this one too.
So if I can use that comparison, to me, what that film did was start with a premise and extrapolate out from there. This film feels like it started with an idea and just ignored that idea once it got going and just went with its own jokes. Like, it's not not every scene is required to actually be about like this immigrant experience, right? Like, it's actually just the backdrop for like where the story starts, and it's like, let's just go with it, and isn't it funny that the premise was there, but now I'm just doing my next beat. But like that other film was always about that, and instead of being an inside joke between one person and themselves, it was like the entire cast was like everybody who lives in LA. And all of them were in on the joke, which felt different to me than I guess this film does.
I get that part. I would personally disagree with how you view this film as starting with an idea and then once it gets going, kind of forgetting the idea. Like I actually think the idea is pretty cohesive in this movie of like, it requires you to believe that the determination that it takes to be an immigrant in this country and decide to keep going, even though everything is against you, is somehow analogous to or related to the determination of a crazy artist who is trying to keep their thing alive. And it requires you to believe that those are two pieces of one journey. And if you don't, then it feels like it is wildly going back and forth between two subplots. I feel like what he's saying is people who choose to stay here have to be built a certain way. Like, we have to have some tolerance and some belief, a delusion, right, in our own like ability to do things that is unmet by the way the world keeps telling us, get out, get out, get out.
Yeah.
And I think that is all one idea, but it's a hazier idea. I agree. It's not like as tight an idea as the world is ending. I was Googling to remember the name of that movie. The imaginary friend, which I think is her younger self or whatever, in that movie, that's Kaylee Spaney. That's Priscilla Presley. So
holy shit.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
Backing up before that tangent, that is weird.
Sure.
What I was going to say is, so Steven, what you're saying is that Julio Torres does not need Tilda Swinton to succeed so that he can get a visa. He needs her to succeed at her like Sisyphean task to justify him Sisyphean-ly trying to.
Yes. Well, and that is why there's that moment when there's no reason for him to help her anymore, and yet he does anyway. Like that's why that makes sense to me.
So it's just the master again.
Yeah, exactly. This is basically the master.
If I can get her to succeed when there's no business for that happening, it means I was not lying to myself the entire time.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's an ode to, in a good way, an ode to delusion, into like the belief that you're going to make it with these. Like, for instance, I would say it is intentional that the toy ideas are not that good, right? Like I think that's an intentional part of the movie. It's someone who just believes in this vision of themselves, even though it doesn't make any sense, and committing to it anyway. And I'm sure when he looks back, he feels like he, Julio Torres, had exactly that. I don't actually know his background, but I assume he, went through the system in some capacity. And he's like, I am this queer, absurd, very offbeat humor person. And I came to this country and I started from the bottom and I committed to my weird vision and the world bent to my will. And now I'm going to make a movie that's like an ode to that bending.
Except for Julio Torres, instead of a little notebook with toy ideas, it was a script with joke ideas.
That would be interesting if Problemista was actually what he started with. I was also wondering, because I didn't hear a lot of chatter about this movie, and it turns out this was at South by Southwest like a full year ago. So might be that a lot of people were talking about it way back then.
Gotcha.
I guess we didn't digitally attend last year.
Did they do it?
Maybe they didn't do it digitally.
Yeah, it might have been just like the art stuff that you could do, but maybe no films. I don't remember. Yeah. But I definitely didn't watch this then.
Nope.
That's for sure.
Let's jump into verdicts, I think.
Yeah, jump into the verdicts. All right, let's do it. Steven Miller, if you're going to give us a must-see, rec with a caveat, wait for rental, pass with a caveat, or must avoid, what would you give it?
I'm giving it a recommend with a caveat with a big old heart emoji on top of it. I believe this is rough. I believe this is very much first movie, off the wall type of thing. You know, this is not Oppenheimer. So it's not a grand cinematic achievement, but I think it is a little bit of, you know, how it ends, or I don't want this to be an offensive comparison, but like Tigers Are Not Afraid, like those kind of movies that are just like a little surreal and they use that to communicate a point and they're small, but I think in the smallness, they convey one thing very well.
Yeah.
And I think this did that. And I was just enchanted by it. I was smiling the whole time. I was happy I saw it. I recommended Joanna go see it too. I think people would enjoy this unless they've used FileMaker Pro and then apparently they're taken out of the movie to such a degree that they retroactively just dislike it.
Maybe, Steven, maybe I just need to check to make sure that I'm connected to the internet. And then my opinion of this film will reset itself and sync to the proper place that it needs to be. But yeah, who knows? For me, I am going to give this a wait for rental with a big old scratching chin emoji.
I know you're past with the caveat, but I'll let you do wait for rental.
Like I said, I didn't hate this film. It just wasn't working for me. And like I said, I still somehow felt emotional at the end of the film, even though I didn't think the film technically had earned its way there for me. It was doing all the things that make you go like, well, fuck yeah, right now I feel this way. But yeah, for me, you know, it's check it out. It's a cute film. It just didn't really grip me. And yeah, it is what it is. Just like this episode is what it is.
Yeah.
But that is going to bring us to the end of this episode. Steven Miller, people want to find you throughout the week. Where can they do that?
People can find me at S. David Miller on Threads, Blue Sky, still on X, though not very often, or sdavidmiller.com.
People can find me at christopherinreallife.com or ChristopherIRL on a number of different social platforms. You can find the podcast over at thespoilerwarning.com where you can get a bunch of the back episodes of the show. If you want to subscribe to the show, you can do so on Overcast, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever podcasts are found. If you want to know when the episodes go live, you can follow us at twitter.com/spoilerwarning, facebook.com/thespoilerwarning, or instagram.com/thespoilerwarning. If you want to get a hold of us directly, you can send an email to fans@thespoilerwarning.com, or you can use the contact form on our site. Music for this episode will come from a track selected from artlist.io, so hopefully you're enjoying that. That is it for now. Steven, next week I'm traveling for work, so we might have to have a delayed recording of whatever is coming out this weekend.
Yep.
But as soon as we stop recording, you and I can chat about what we're seeing and when we're seeing it.
I think it's going to be Love Lies Bleeding, if I'm remembering right.
Yeah, I have that booked for Thursday, so I will have seen it early.
I can maybe make it work, but we can see.
Okay, yeah, we'll figure it out. One way or another, you guys are going to get a Love Lies Bleeding review. I feel like there's something else coming out too, but yeah.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.